Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. In this daily editorial, we are introducing a new guest to the show. His name is Dan Steffens. He is the president of Energy Prospectus Group. This is a letter where Dan focuses on the energy sector, not just on oil and gas and the underlying stocks. However, he does cover a lot of those stocks for his subscribers, as well as issues some fairly detailed due diligence reports on the stocks, especially that Dan likes and some of the ones that have crossed his radar. Now, Dan, since it is your first time on the show, I really do want to give a little bit more insight in your newsletter. I have been reading over it now for about a month, and I'm impressed at how you build out these different portfolios depending on what your subscribers might be interested in terms of small cap, high yield growth, and some of just your maybe favorite stocks in general. Can we get a little background on you first, Dan? What is some of your history in the oil sector?
Well, I am almost 68 years old, and I have been in the energy sector, working in the energy sector on the financial side for at least 42 years. I had about 4 or 5 years in public accounting first, and then I was hired away by a oil and gas company. But anyway, I went to Tulsa University, got a accounting degree, then went back and got a master's degree in taxation, of all things. And so I've been in the financial side for quite a while and been through many oil price cycles. So I left Hess in 2021. That's Hess Corp, New York Stock Exchange Hess Corp, here in Houston. I mean, I live in the Houston area. I co-founded the Energy Prospectus Group in 2001, and I took it over 100% in 2006. So I've been doing this for, you know, a lot of years. In addition to the newsletter, we do individual reports on about 50, 60 different companies a year. And basically what I say is we do the due diligence that people should be doing before they invest. And I really only recommend companies that are generating a lot of good cash flow. They can fund their growth plans. They don't need to keep tapping into the equity market and stuff like that. Anyway, but it's been quite good. Last year, our top picks, we called them the Sweet 16 for the year, gained 132%. It was pretty easy because they were so grossly oversold in 2020 that they, the ones that made it, bounced back pretty quickly. But that's kind of where we are now. So we can go from there.
Can you share a little bit more insights into the different portfolios? As I said, you have these other maybe stages of portfolios. That Sweet 16, those are, from my understanding, your favorite 16. But you do also have the small cap growth portfolio, the high yield growth portfolio. How do these all fit into the letter?
Well, the Sweet 16 is actually the larger companies. Most of them are, you know, multi-billion dollar market caps. The largest company we follow is EOG Resources, and it's got about a $60 billion market cap. So these are not small, unknown companies. And within the Sweet 16, I call it the Elite Eight. I mean, the reason it's called the Sweet 16, we actually started it during basketball season and decided just to pick 16, and it's stuck. So that's been going. So, but it's right now it's pretty overweighted to oil versus natural gas, but we do have five companies in the Sweet 16 get the majority of their revenues from natural gas. And then the next portfolio is companies that are growing. It's a small cap growth portfolio. And usually if they keep growing after a couple of years in our small cap growth portfolio, they graduate into the Sweet 16. So, and on January 1st, I put three new companies, moved them up into the Sweet 16. And then the high yield income portfolio, that exactly what it is. It's a high dividend yield. And right now, based on the current share prices, the average yield is over 8%, up to like even 12% for one of them. And a lot of midstream companies pay really good dividends. And if you're looking to park some cash in something, these high yield companies look really good right now.
So Dan, let's talk about your outlook then for oil. Let's start with the broad commodity in that sense, because oil, look, continues to move higher. It had a short little pullback at the tail end of last year, but then this month oil is doing well and sitting in the high 80 range per barrel for crude. We haven't seen those levels since back in about 2014. What's your outlook for oil? Do you think higher prices are still to come?
Yeah, I think we're going to see much higher prices in the next few months. But just to let you guys know, all my valuations of the stocks are based on oil averaging $80. That's West Texas Intermediate averaging $80. That would be Brent about $82 or so. And then natural gas averaging $3.50 for both 2022 and 2023. I think if I had to quote, pick a right price for oil, it would be somewhere in the 80s, mid 80s. Right now, we get the situation with Russia and Ukraine that's causing a lot of nervousness. And if that would really flare up and turn into a shooting war, it could impact oil supplies, since Russia is one of the top three producing countries in the world for crude oil. But also, I want to tell your listeners that the global oil market is much, much tighter than people realize. Over the last 18 months, since mid-2020, when we got past the first part of the pandemic, we have been draining above ground inventories of oil by an average of 1.9 million barrels a day. That is, and the U.S. inventories are below where they should be. The OECD, that's the Organization of Economic and Cooperation Countries, which is Europe, Australia, Japan, South Korea, those countries, and they are the consumers of oil-based products, and their economies must have a steady supply of crude oil, which is the raw material that makes the fuels and the materials that our economies run on. And right now, those inventories are below 30 days of supply. They're actually have recently dipped below 27 days of supply. That may sound like a lot, but if we don't have a steady flow of crude oil into our refineries, we can start having regional supply problems. And we today have got a very dangerously low situation in distillates, which is home heating oil and diesel. And that is because we cannot make diesel out of the heavy are out of the light crudes. The ultra light crudes that come out of these shale plays are too light, and you cannot make the heavier fuels like diesel out of them. So we got some serious problems. And I also think the OPEC group, OPEC Plus, which includes a group led by Russia, I think they're very close to being tapped out on their supply capacity. They keep saying they can bring more oil to the market, and it just doesn't look like it. For the last 4 months, they have not produced up to their quota. And it's estimated that in December, they were 700,000 barrels a day below their quota. So it's already 14 or 15 countries have already announced that they've peaked out. They can't meet their quota. So it's much tighter than people think.
Well, Dan, I was going to ask you about that because, you know, we see headlines like, you know, OPEC Plus, they're getting ready to continue with their 400,000 barrels per day production increase. But at the same time, we see them saying they have shrinking capacity and that a lot of these countries may not be able to. So there's going to be a breaking point soon. Like you pointed out, there's a difference in the kind of oils that feed the refineries as to what people need for some of the other products like the distillates. So do you think there's a point where certain countries will emerge as a premium priced product because of that?
Yeah. And the situation with OPEC, you know, there's been a lot of discussion about the underinvestment in oil and gas drilling and completing, and that's what's caused this. Well, those countries have been underinvesting also, and their wells deplete and decline just like all the other oil wells in the world. And they are not going to be able to get back to that pre-pandemic level because they haven't been spending money on drilling new wells, infrastructure, what they need to keep their production at least level. So this belief that they can just run out and turn a bunch of valves on and jump right back to where they were, that's a false paradigm. They can't. I think that maybe Saudi Arabia, UAE, maybe Kuwait. We know that Iran has got a bunch of oil offline, but I think they are even smuggling a lot of that out through Iraq probably. So even if they come back online, it's not that big of a deal. Our situation with the different products, though, is we have a lot of refineries built in Texas and Louisiana that were built to handle heavy crudes coming from Canada by a pipeline all the way down to the Gulf Coast and also from Venezuela. And we've been cut off. You know, we won't, you know, let them build the Keystone Pipeline. And it gets harder and harder to get these heavy oils to get our refineries. And yes, we're exporting light crude because we don't have the refining capacity to process it. So we don't have the right kind of crude oil to get the distillates that we need. And we're 17% today in the announcement EIA put out. We're 17% below the five-year average of where diesel and home heating oil inventory should be.
Well, Dan, you're kind of reading my mind there, because what I was thinking about was how some of these pipeline projects kind of change the dynamics. And I wonder how much ESG and some of these policy initiatives have actually killed some of the investment in, you know, new exploration, you know, bringing on new wells, and it's changed the dynamics of how oil moves around the world. How much do you think these policy decisions and things like ESG and the focus from institutions to divest, you know, their investments in development and putting money into the ground has changed the dynamic of the world oil stage?
Oh, yeah, it's really a big deal. And let me tell you that everybody in the oil industry, we're all environmentalists. We all want clean air. We want clean water. We're not polluters. I can tell you that oil and gas producing companies, the last thing they want to do is spill oil on the ground or vent or flare their gas. They want to sell it. You know, they don't want to spill it or burn it up at the well site. They want to sell it. And so, you know, these things that they're all a bunch of villains is just ridiculous. And the situation we have in Washington is Biden has loaded up his team with all like-minded people. They're all environmental wackos. They think we can switch in a very short period of time to wind and solar. And number one, wind and solar produce electricity. They do not produce transportation fuels or plastics or all this stuff. So we are never going to get off of oil and gas. The most aggressive forecast that I've seen from anybody is that wind and solar and renewables total will account for about 25% of global energy by the year 2050. And the other 75% will come from oil, gas, and coal. So this thought that we can just, you know, shut in all oil wells or something is absolutely insane. And we just need to have a more realistic energy policy. And in order to do that, you have to have people that are experts in the industry that know how to do it. Because the big companies like Exxon, Shell, and that, they're energy companies. They want to make money. And if that means they go to wind and solar or nuclear or whatever, they'll do it. They're not, you know, they're going to do what makes money for their shareholders. So they're not against this stuff, but they just know that it can't possibly gear up to the scale that it's going to take to get rid of oil and gas. We just know it. So.
Well, Dan, it's something that we actually have talked about, just what's needed for some of this build out to this greener world and how long that's going to take. And again, the commodities that are needed for that. Let's move into some of the stocks, though, because as you mentioned, you do like to cover stocks that are cash flowing, ones that don't need to go back to the market. Nice thing about a lot of energy and oil stocks is that many of them do cash flow, especially at these higher price levels. But it's all a sliding scale of how much they are producing and how much cash they are generating. Where do you see a sweet spot right now in terms of the oil stocks underlying this higher oil price?
Yeah. And let me tell you that all the companies in our Sweet 16 and all the companies in our small cap growth portfolio are currently generating free cash flow. That means their cash flow from operations covers not only their expenses, but it covers all their drilling and completion costs. They're generating enough free cash flow to pay dividends, to fund stock buybacks, pay down debt, which a lot of them have really, really cleaned up their balance sheets over the last year. But if oil stays at 80 and gas stays over $3, these companies are generating a lot of cash flow. And the reason that is one of my main criteria for valuing a stock is because this is an extremely capital intensive business. We're talking, hundreds of billions of dollars spent on drilling wells, completing them, pipelines, infrastructure that's needed around the world. It's a very, very capital intensive business. So you don't want to pick companies that you know, they may have a great plan, they may have great acreage, but they don't have the money to finish their plan, because it's harder and harder to go to a bank and get them to loan money to an energy company. Although I will tell you that in my experience over 40 years, the bankers are your best friend when you're making money. You should all know that when you don't need them, they'll loan you money. But as far as the stocks that I like some of the bigger ones that two that I moved into our high yield income portfolio are Pioneer Natural Resources. That's PXD and Devon Energy. And both of them have announced variable dividend programs that, according to my forecast for this next couple of years, they're going to be paying double digit dividend yield. I mean, 12, 14, 15% dividend yield. If oil and gas prices stay this high, they've already started paying those dividends. I think their first dividend based on the share prices today are like 7 or 8%, but they're going to gradually start ramping those up because they're going to be paying out a higher and higher percentage of their free cash flow. The largest company, and probably the safest company is EOG Resources. It's heavily weighted to oil. It's actually going to cash flow like $8 billion this year. The sizes of this company is amazing. And this company, EOG Resources, stands for Enron Oil and Gas. They spun out of Enron before the other part of Enron went down the tubes. Now, on the natural gas side, the largest producer of natural gas in North America is EQT Corp. And they're almost 100% Marcellus Utica company, with their production coming from Ohio, Pennsylvania, and West Virginia. By far, they're the largest producer of natural gas. Antero Resources, their symbol is AR. It's made a huge comeback. That stock got down to low single digits, and it's about at $20 a share now, but it's still got a lot of upside. My valuation is $29.50 on it currently. So about 50% upside there. Let's see. Coterra, that's a new name, but Coterra is the combination, the merger of Cimarex Energy and Cabot Oil and Gas. They merged here at the 1st of October. That merger closed. And right after the merger, they renamed the company to Coterra. And its symbol is CTRA. And they have also announced a very aggressive dividend program. So I like it for dividends and growth. Of course, Diamondback, you may have heard of. And I just like their symbol. Their symbol is FANG, F-A-N-G. That's a nice one. And then some of the smaller companies, let me give you three names. And these I have just promoted into our Sweet 16. Magnolia Oil and Gas, its symbol is MGY. It's unique for it. It's a fairly small company, but it has none of its production hedged. It's got a very strong balance sheet. It doesn't need to hedge production. And if you think oil prices are like going to $100 or something, or just staying over 80, this company is going to be generating a lot of profits and cash flow. The other one is Matador Resources. I've been following it for like 5 years. It's just been a tremendous growth story. It's a Permian Basin company with some little bit of production down in the Eagle Ford. And then another one is Northern Oil and Gas. NOG is that symbol. And they've announced a very interesting dividend program. They've announced that they're going to be increasing their dividend by 3 cents a share every quarter through at least 2023. And it's going to get up to a pretty decent cash flow and our dividend yield pretty soon, but it also has a lot of growth. Now, it is 100% of its properties are outside operated. Actually, a lot of its properties are operated by EQT. And so it's got stuff in the Appalachia, that's Marcellus, Utica, Permian Basin, and up in North Dakota, where its roots are up in the Bakken play up in North Dakota. So anyway, those are some pretty good names.
Well, Dan, you brought up some natural gas companies in there as well as the oil. I was just wondering what your thoughts were as far as we see more trends towards displacing, let's say, coal power and some of the other oil and gas. There is an interest in natural gas plants. Do you think that gives some of the nat gas plays an edge? Also, there's some pretty big price disparity in certain countries. There's a big premium certain countries are paying for natural gas. So do you see there being the potential for growth in that space, maybe more so than oil as we move forward?
Well, I'm old enough to remember when the total U.S. natural gas market was about 20 BCF a day, and now we're over 90 billion cubic feet a day of gas production. We are now exporting by LNG plus pipeline into Mexico and Eastern Canada. We are exporting about 20 BCF a day. So our exports continue to increase, but we are blessed with a massive natural gas resources in North America. This is a blessing for both Canada and the United States. It's clean burning fuel. We've replaced a whole bunch of coal-fired power plants. There's areas around the country that now rely full year round on natural gas-fired power plants. They're easy to construct and they're easy to right size too. That's what's good about natural gas. You can right size for a certain city. You know, if Houston maybe needs three or four big ones, well, maybe, you know, some little Tyler, Texas or something maybe needs a smaller one, and you can right size them, and they have very small footprints, and they also you see steam coming out of them, but that's about it. You don't see much in the way of pollution coming out of a gas-fired power plant. So they're very clean, and gas is the transition fuel that we're going to need to get to more wind and solar, because wind and solar produce electricity, natural gas produces electricity, and those are going to be a big part of our electricity supply from now on. I like those. I like them a lot. And in our high yield income portfolio, that's where we have, several of those midstream companies. Now, that's more of a utility companies, but we more have the pipelines and stuff like that in there. And there's some good ones in there. The one I really like that's real safe, if you want safety, is One Oak, based in Tulsa. When my office was in Tulsa, my window looked right out at their office, and it's about a 100-year-old company, and they gather and process natural gas and natural gas liquids. And also Antero, I want to mention, Antero is the second largest producer of NGLs, and NGLs are like propane, butane, and propane prices are like going through the roof. Propane prices are up like 300-400% in the last 6 months.
All right. Hey, Dan, very interesting comments. Nice to have you on the show. As I mentioned, I have been reading over your newsletter again, the Energy Prospectus Group. And there's a lot of good information on these companies, plus those individual reports that you publish on these companies really do break down why you like them. So it does give some good insights into those. If anybody wants more information on Dan's product, please click the link below. And hey, we will be having Dan back on the show. So Dan, I look forward to following up with you as some maybe more news and data comes out of the energy sector and following up on even more of your recommendations. Dan, thank you again for your time. I hope you have a great rest of your week.
Okay. Thank you.